Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL Draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They called me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. At the very top of this week, we would like to extend our thoughts and well wishes to the people of the Middle East who have survived a catastrophic earthquake, one that Turkey's own government recently said is something no one could prepare for. So we're keeping you in our thoughts, all fellow conspiracy realists who live in the area or have family there. Today, we are going to do what we love to do on our weekly Strange News segment. We're going to explore stories that don't quite get the attention we wish they did. Some of this is breaking news. Some of this is news that a lot of other media outlets mentioned and then ignored. We're going to, talk about the balloon debacle a bit. We're going to also talk about what happens when an FBI agent becomes a turncoat. And of course, we're going to find some secret satellites on the way. But before we do all of that, there is a pretty funny story coming out of Singapore that also leads us to some very, I would say, serious and disturbing conversations.
Yeah, yeah. It's all about the secret satellites we met along the way. I'm sorry. It's been a minute, but I had to add that in. In this case, with this fella, definitely not about the friends he made along the way, because this guy's kind of feels like a no friends kind of fellow. You guys are familiar with the term being put in the friend zone?
Very familiar.
Yes.
I've done it to people. I'm sorry to say.
Okay, but fair enough. But typically it's men being friend zoned by women. Matt, you've spoken like someone who has truly been on that side of it, as have I. It's a thing. It's definitely a thing, and it doesn't feel great, but you know what? We're all adults here, and we know how to manage our feelings and our emotions and not act like big man babies, right? right?
Sure.
I mean, I don't really have feelings, but like, yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, so present company accepted, I think. Yeah, accepted. There are some who maybe don't know how to just take one on the chin and kind of move on. I've been friend zoned and then maintained friendships with said person who placed me in said zone. But today's story is about someone that not only could not do that, instead decided to double, nay, triple down, and essentially make a federal case, or at the very least a magistrate case in Singapore about essentially being entitled to the affections of a woman, which we know isn't something that you typically litigate about. He is seeking, this man by the name of Kay Kawashigan, is seeking more than 3 million Singapore dollars, currency units. I'm not sure what the name of the unit is right off the top of my head here, which amounts to around 2 million US dollars, roughly 1.87 British pounds. And he is accusing this unnamed woman of causing him trauma and damages to his, quote, stellar reputation by essentially parading himself in front of everyone, essentially become a national news story, as kind of being the, like, you know, king of the incels. I mean, this is really someone who was essentially rejected, and rather than just accepting that fact, has decided to sue this individual through not one, but two court cases in a magistrate's court there in Singapore. He claimed that this woman, quote, breached an agreement to improve their relationship, which that one was dismissed as being manifestly groundless and without foundation. This result was published in January, and it found that his claims was in fact an absolute flouting of the law, or, you know, an abuse of what, you know, these types of proceedings are meant to actually, you know, remedy. This guy was wasting the court's time and essentially further abusing or, you know, causing harm to this woman. The judge in the case claimed that this individual had, quote, an ulterior motive of vexing or oppressing the defendant. So let's do just a little bit of backstory. These two met apparently in 2016, according to court filings. But it wasn't until 2020 that I guess there was some misunderstanding, or not I guess, there were definitely some misunderstandings as to the nature of the relationship. The defendant claimed, the woman claimed, that she saw Mr. Kawashigan as just a friend. Although he claimed, this is even weirder, that she was his closest friend. Okay, so that's still odd. He's saying, wait, no, I thought you were my best friend. Are you just a friend? Bismarcky would be proud, or perhaps ashamed. At this point, probably because this guy was kind of freaking out a little bit, the woman asked that their interactions be reduced. Keep this guy at arm's length. And this was not taken very well by the claimant, Mr. Kawashigan, who felt that this was essentially, quote, this is again according to the court file, he's taking a step back in their relationship. And he was not accepting of these boundaries that the defendant was attempting to impose. So essentially, this led to a period where the woman actually consented to participating in a counseling regimen for 18 months after a threat of legal action on this matter from Kawashigan. After which she decided, you know what, I'm putting my foot down, I'm drawing a line in the sand, I'm not going to be harassed by this person anymore, because he did not let up after the counseling had concluded. Which, I mean, can you imagine being bullied into going to counseling with someone that is, like, not your partner, but that seems to be just deluded to the point of, like, you are my significant other, but you had no idea?
Just to pipe in here briefly, I think it clearly seems to be a form of another theater of abuse. Honestly, I want to shout out a great subreddit called 2X Chromosomes, where I learned about this. And then, also learned a lot about the ways in which people can abuse folks using the legal system. And it's something that, unfortunately, I think a lot of people, honestly, dudes, including myself, don't think about.
Yeah. Did you come across in that thread the concept of DARVO?
I don't know if it was in that thread, but I've heard it. It's an acronym, correct?
Deny, attack, reverse victim, and offender, which is a common tactic that abusers use to essentially do what you're talking about, Ben, to kind of portray themselves as the party that has been injured and to potentially escalate that in a legal proceeding. And this is exactly what he tried to do with the second court case for which he was seeking damages upwards of $3 million. This Guardian article, by the way, which was written by Rebecca Ratliff, who's a Southeast Asian correspondent for The Guardian, jumps around between pounds and dollars. And then sometimes it says Singapore dollars. So forgive me if I'm not getting the conversions exactly right. But in the second court case, he was seeking damages upwards of $3 million. And I believe that is Singapore dollars, for things like lost investments, amounting like over $1 million. And as I mentioned at the top, damage to his stellar reputation, trauma, depression, and impacts. But in the court filing, or in the judge's decision, rather, he kind of told on himself. The court paper adds that such remarks, he averred, suggested that he had harassed and spied on her, and this caused him to suffer damage. So he's essentially, you know, kind of telling on himself, and he's really just putting himself on blast. The lack of self-awareness here is pretty stunning. And AWARE, which is a gender equality advocacy group, really came to this woman's aid in this situation and kind of raised the profile of the story. They had this to say in a statement. Women do not owe men their time or attention, much less their friendship, love, sexual activity, or emotional labor. A lot of the details that have been released, they describe as painting an alarming picture of male sexual and romantic entitlement. And that then they referred to this concept of DARVO, deny, attack, reverse victim, and offender. Not to mention that, you know, in Singapore, it is a pretty patriarchal society. I mean, not that America isn't. But I don't know, Ben, you've traveled abroad in that part of the world much more than I have. Would you say that's accurate, that maybe there might even be a leg up for? I mean, no, I don't think anyone in America would ever be so bold as to file cases like this. But maybe, you know, the climate's different in Singapore, that he thought he had a chance.
Yeah, of course, we're not going to be experientially aware as well as anybody who is a woman or identifies as a woman and has to experience these horrible things constantly. But gender equality in Singapore is still, it's an ongoing struggle from what I understand. Like so many other countries, of course, the letter of the law is all about equality, but there's still a patriarchy in practice, of course. You know, there's a lot of social pressure to for like women to have to get married, to have to be primarily in charge of everything that happens in the household. And I, unfortunately, again, that's something a lot of our fellow conspiracy realists in the audience can personally identify with.
Yeah, Matt, I can see the gears turning there. Been a little quiet on this one, but other than, you know, again, you and I both copping to having been through this ourselves, and it's certainly not something that you, it's not a hill that you want to die on for obvious reasons. It's just not the right thing, you know, relationships go two ways. But what are your thoughts on maybe the cultural implications of this, and, you know, how could someone be so oblivious to one's own actions and behavior? This guy also, by the way, is a high-level dude. He's like a CEO of a aerial, like a drone company. So he's like this, you know, maybe that even adds to the entitlement, but I don't know. What do you think about this this situation in this court case?
It's weird, man, because relationships and love, it's all difficult stuff, right? And most of that kind of personal relationship happens behind closed doors. So you never really know what exactly is going on if you're an observer. So in this situation, who knows what their relationship was like when they were just together. It seems like this person, this guy, was unhappy with that. It's insane that he thinks he can sue to change that situation. Because, like, what is... I don't understand. Does he...
What does he think is going to happen?
Yeah, right? what comes out of it? I mean...
It seems more like retribution rather than...
Exactly.
I mean, you know the case is going to get thrown out, even if you're not a lawyer.
Well, even if it doesn't get thrown out, let's say it goes all the way through and he wins money. Now he's, like, supremely hurt the person that he supposedly cares so much about. I mean, in that world where he wins... It just seems mean-spirited all around, so that's awful.
Big incel energy, agreed.
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? Like, again, maybe I'm just, I can't speak to the cultural climate of how something like this would be interpreted. Like, is this something that, like, his bros are going to look at and be like, yeah, you go, you stick it to her, you know? But to me, it's just more like, ooh, yikes. I don't want to hang out with that guy anymore, let alone do business. It just, you know, strikes me as someone, because I mean, you know, this presumably a guy who's, you know, wealthy and shouldn't have trouble getting dates, but is just so nasty and mean-spirited and entitled that, like, it's just such a bad look, like, even for business, for any kind of, you know, interpersonal interaction, you know, I think cultural implications aside, I just can't imagine you would, I would just be like, okay, let's just move on from this. No, everyone must know that she wronged me, but there's no evidence of that whatsoever, you know? So this is just this guy kind of like putting himself, you know, running himself up a flagpole for all to see what a kind of weenie he is.
Yeah, one thing I have learned, I haven't learned a lot in this life, but I have learned that desperation is perhaps the least attractive thing that you can...
Oh, yeah.
Exude.
Indeed. Yeah, indeed. And this whole thing reeks of desperation. Let me make sure I've got it right. The second case I think is still pending. But the first one was thrown out, and the second one likely will be as well, because just absolutely no evidence of any of the things that this person's talking about. So we'll see. Kay Kawashigan. I bet he wasn't thinking that he was gonna be a national mockery. But here we are. Here we are. And here we go to take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsor, and then we will return with another piece of strange news.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL Draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not adjust your headphones, ladies and gentlemen. This is a feed from space. I know that's a weird cold open for this part of our strange news segment, but we'll tell you exactly what that was in just a moment. Right now, Matt Knoll, there was a little hint I gave. It was from space. What do you guys think it is? If you had to guess as audio experts.
Oh, man.
Going on nothing, just being fair.
Yeah, I don't know. It just kind of sounded like some sort of electromagnetic interference filtered through like some kind of white noise. Couldn't tell you. It really does sound like maybe it kind of sounded like a modem tone a little bit too, like an old classic modem tone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe it was a weather heard.
It was a weather balloon's 56K modem.
So these are great guesses and you're really close. This is actually, and I don't know if anybody could hear this from just the very few seconds we played, but folks, what you just heard was a little bit of Morse code through a bunch of weird filters. This story has been on my mind because it recently broke this month, and I learned about it or relearned about it during this whole balloon debacle. Now, you guys remember just recently, there was a big to-do as the United States ultimately shot down a balloon from China, right? That was about 200 feet tall, hauling about 3 school buses worth of stuff. It was about the stuff under the balloon was about 3 school buses long. Because we're Americans and we'll do anything to not use the metric system, right? We don't know how many meters, but definitely 3 school buses.
We have our reasons.
Mm-hmm. We have our reasons. And the balloon thing is probably its own episode in the future. For anybody who doesn't know, by the way, all sorts of countries launch balloons on a globally connected and coordinated schedule. And several of these balloons have been over the United States in the past. This one got a lot of press, but there are other things people aren't talking about. And this got us thinking, or me thinking at least, about all the other spy stuff in the sky. Right now, as we're recording, Uncle Sam has retrieved the debris of that Chinese balloon and they're taking it apart to see what mechanisms may have been up there, you know, like what kind of components they had, what sort of stuff they were trying to gather. But there's another thing in the sky that is also falling down, not to be too Chicken Little about it. It is a Russian satellite called Cosmos 2499. This thing is super weird. And for anyone playing along at home, that's Cosmos with a K to make it even cooler. this thing, we talked about spy satellites at length in previous episodes over the years. We know about things like the Corona satellite, the Key program. Basically, every country that could spy from orbit has been trying to do so from the day they knew it was a thing. The CIA and some of the Alphabet boys were putting satellites up in the air for surveillance purposes before they could even digitally send images. It was actually really impressive logistically. The U.S. had, I think there were Corona satellites. Yeah, in the Corona program, they had satellites over orbit, and those things would take pictures and then physically drop rolls of film. And some hapless intern probably had to go try to find it. It's like somewhere in Utah or something. So other countries, of course, did this too. Cosmos 2499 was a Russian satellite orbiting Earth that was launched in 2014. Nobody was sure what it was doing. They did know that it was maneuverable, right? So it could move around. It was one of several satellites Russia launched into space. To this day, no one knows what it was doing up there, except it was launched with other communication satellites. It was not on any launch manifest. It was very off the books. And January 4th, this thing started breaking up. So it's kind of like if X-37B just sort of started, I don't know the right English word for it, but started kind of in space. So we know that these things can be dangerous, just regular satellites, right? When the debris starts going into the atmosphere, if it doesn't burn up. But it's such a black box. It's a mystery, you guys, because no one knows what it was up to up there. No one knows why it broke up, if it was planned, if it was just, you know, shoddy design. Since we don't know why it was there, we don't know what to make of what happened. What the clip we played at the very beginning, you guys are so great at this stuff. You're spot on in these things. It basically was kind of like a modem song, because on November 25th, 2014, it broadcast Morse code. That's what we heard. And we owe a lot of this to a journalist named Anatoly Zak, who has been tracing the movements of this thing for quite some time on his website, Russian Space Web. Also, while we're shouting people out, shout out to Matthew Galt over at Motherboard on Vice, and shout out to The Guardian for some excellent reporting there. But that's the headline. Weird thing in the sky, been there for a while, started breaking up. No one knows why.
So my understanding of it breaking up is that it just turned from one satellite into like 90 pieces or something like that. Like disintegration. And that's not the right word. I don't know. You were searching for the word earlier, Ben, and I can't come up with it, where it just becomes its component parts. It's the Legos all become single Legos now. When that happens, and this thing is in the type of orbit that it's in, doesn't it just become space junk and more of the field of crap that's just orbiting around Earth?
Yeah, it could. I mean, that's a good question, Matt, because it could return toward Earth and then just disintegrate in the atmosphere, right? Which is very tough to get through. It could just be part of that big redneck style front yard that low Earth orbit has become, you know. Right now we know that Space Force, which is still a real thing, is tracking all these chunks of debris, and they're pretty confident that a lot of it is going to be in the atmosphere for years and years. You can find some updates on this from the 18th Space Defense Squadron on Twitter, 18th SDS.
What?
Yeah. Everyone's on Twitter now, right? So the few things we do know about it is that the head of the Russian space agency, Roscosmos, said that Cosmos 2499 was not a, quote, killer satellite, and that it was designed for research. Hope you can hear the air quotes there, folks, because they didn't say what kind of research it was. Yeah.
Just like X-37B
and the balloon. Yeah. It's also been called Object 2014-28E. I think Cosmos is a way cooler name, right?
Yeah, totally.
And
very Carl Sagan-y.
Yeah. Just so. And right before it had started to, how about this word? Disassemble. Maybe that's a good word.
Right? Disassemble. Or like, what the heck happened to it?
Right before then, the big guesses from the experts were that it was perhaps an anti-satellite weapon, a satellite maintenance vehicle, or a collector of space debris, all of which would be impressive, right? And all of which are arguably technologies that governments want to have. But all people knew for sure was that it seemed to be experimental. It seemed to be an improvement on what was already currently out there. And this got me thinking, how many secret satellites are above us right now? Because you can't really hide them, you know?
Well, you know, there's the flip side of that, too, is all of the space debris, right? I mean, is there any discussion or even interest, or would it be just logistically too much cleaning some of that up? Or is it just logistically impossible, given what it takes to tote things around in space?
It's tough. So as far as we know, only one person has actually been hit by space debris, by man-made space debris. And that dubious prize goes to Lottie Williams, not an astronaut, a resident of Tulsa, Oklahoma, who was hit in the shoulder by a piece in 1997 and sustained no injuries. It's a very weird lottery to win, but I think we're talking more about like trying to clean the front yard of Earth, right?
Big picture, right? Yeah, like, I mean, if we don't start now, isn't this stuff just going to collect and, you know, before we know it? I mean, obviously space is vast, but if you don't, you know, get ahead of the curve there, you could be looking at pretty junky space come, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Not too terribly far in the future.
Oh, yeah. The future is now. We're talking about stuff that could be as small as a couple of little grains or flakes of paint, or something as big as a mid-sized car, a sedan. And the huge danger about this stuff is that it moves so quickly. It becomes a projectile. Even though satellites might look slow when you see them from Earth, they're moving at 28,000 kilometers an hour, which is about 17,400 miles an hour. It's pretty crazy. Even like, forget dropping a penny off the Empire State Building. Anything can be deadly at that speed. And we know it will be a problem when or if humanity starts exploring space at scale. Because, you know, the United States has a lot of stuff up there, but so does Russia, so does China, so does India. Private companies are going to be a big thing, just like, I mean, this might be an episode for a different day, but we're sort of looking at, I would argue, the formation of a new East India Company when it comes to lunar exploration and Martian exploration. And I don't know. Like right now, I don't have much that I can confirm about this thing because no one outside of Roscosmos has anything they can confirm about it. It was launched under shady circumstances. Absolutely no one knows what's up with it. But we do have one interesting thing that we could add here. Russia does have missiles to shoot down satellites. They did it in 2021. The US did it earlier. And of course, China followed suit. So the big three global powers in space are able to shoot this stuff down. But wouldn't we have heard about that? Wouldn't someone have said they could confirm the satellite had been shot down? It feels like it just maybe broke down. Yeah.
When did X-37B last return?
Oh no, I'm
wrong. It was November 2022. Okay. Never mind. If those two things coincided, confirmed. No, I'm just joking. Hey, would it be crazy to put an X-37B like vehicle up in orbit like that? Make sure it has a robust propulsion system so it can move a bit when it's up there. Have some serious like vacuum arms, right? Or grabber arms. And it could put all that stuff into its payload, the size of a Tacoma truck bed, and then like package it up in, oh, I don't know, huge balloons, and then drop it down to Earth to be plasma gasified. You remember that whole process?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a nice thought. It's a lovely, lovely thought, Matt. And that's what I was, you know, hoping there would be a solution. But my understanding, too, is that, you know, the biggest cost of space travel is the payload. And typically we have higher priority things to put on ships to and from space than space trash.
Well, I'm saying you like somehow package it up in a space balloon like thing, and then you drop
it
down.
A space Roomba, right?
Like space Roomba. That's what I'm talking about.
So get on it, Roomba, because right now there are an estimated more than 130 million objects in space, man-made. They're at least 1 millimeter across in Earth orbit. So it's going to be dangerous to walk through the front yard pretty soon, even if you have amazing mathematical abilities. Right, which all the space agencies do. This stuff, this mystery spy satellite, whatever Cosmos 2499 is or was, it's going to take at least a century for all those bits and pieces to make it down to the atmosphere of Earth. And in the meantime, while that stuff is slowly coming down and burning up, we have to ask ourselves, how many more spy satellites are going to be launched, and what will they be doing up there? With that chilling thought, we're going to pause for a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back with more strange news.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Guys, we're going to talk about spies and intelligence agencies. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. Let's introduce the primary character within this story, Mr. Charles F. McGonagall. This person, if you Google his name right now, will be described most commonly as, quote, a former high-level FBI official. His official title, before retiring, was Special Agent in charge of the New York FBI Counterintelligence Division. Now, that's a special agent that's in charge. Guys, do we know much about what that means? If you're a special agent in charge, that means you're probably pretty high up in the pecking order at the FBI, right?
Yeah, you're special.
Yeah, I would assume so. I guess you get better seating in the cafeteria than the regular agents.
I think so. It would be funny if it was regular agent in charge.
Nobody says regular anymore. It's always like classic or signature, at least in restaurants. I'm a signature agent.
It's funny you mentioned that, but sorry to derail really quickly. I just went to the Cracker Barrel the weekend, and they serve alcohol there now, which is weird. Changed the vibe a little bit. And B, so many signature things on that menu. And I'm like, what does this even mean? Whose signature? I want a name associated with a signature dish or drink. There's one that was just a signature hot cocoa. It just was hot cocoa. Anyway, I digress.
It's like when people say, when people put hand in the description of a food, like hand rolled,
hand spun,
hand cut, hand spun. Anyway, so if I, Matt, check me on this, I may be incorrect. I believe special agent in charge is definitely a supervisory position, but not so much admin. They're just kind of, they're almost like the executive producer of whatever the thing being investigated is. Does that comparison work?
Yeah, sure. But definitely a gatekeeper of a lot of classified information. Okay. And they're in charge and they're in New York and they're dealing with counterintelligence. That's what this position means.
And this, by the way, this one was, we were talking about this off air before we started recording. I think I may have heard maybe a headline about this, but otherwise this is completely new to me. I totally missed this one. So I'm right there with you, fellow listeners.
Awesome. Well, we're going to learn a lot. Not everything right now, maybe a little bit down the line, but we're going to talk about it. So you may have heard about this guy since about January of this year. He's been getting in some trouble, a lot of trouble right now. He worked for the FBI for a total of 22 years, and then he retired in 2018. And this past January, on the 22nd, he was arrested while at JFK Airport in New York City, and he was charged with a bunch of things.
Selling loose cigarettes?
Yes, mostly loose cigarettes, but also violating...
I get you with the loosies every time.
Yeah, every time. Also violating U.S. sanctions.
On loose cigarette sales,
yeah, there
presumably.
You go. He was allegedly working in 2021 with this Russian oligarch. I don't know if we've ever mentioned this particular one, guys. We mentioned several, but this is a Russian oligarch who was sanctioned for allegedly interfering in the 2016 presidential election. This guy's name is Oleg Deripaska, D-E-R-I-P-A-S-K-A. So he's allegedly working with this dude. And that's what the violating U.S. sanctions was about, because that guy was sanctioned. He's also charged with conspiracy and with money laundering and basically receiving a bunch of money from this oligarch and people who worked with him. He's also charged with concealing connections he had with some person who worked earlier for an Albanian intelligence agency. So like concealing the connections that he had with other people, with foreign nationals. He also was concealing a bunch of overseas travel. So that's a big no-no when you're, in the FBI or an intelligence agency. You got to let people know when you're going overseas and who you're going to be meeting with. That disclosure of that information is very important to the people above special agent in charge. As well as supposed to be really important to special agents in charge. But yeah, he wasn't talking about any of that stuff. He was meeting with Albanian intelligence folks, and he was receiving a ton of money, allegedly $225,000 in payments. One of the payments, he was sitting in a car in New York City and received $80,000 in payment for something, which was apparently observed
in cash
by the FBI investigation. Doesn't look good.
Doesn't you would just look think, good. I mean, wouldn't you think that if you were that versed in counterintelligence, you would be able to reverse engineer at least some collection procedures that would not get you caught? Like, oh, I'm in the car, hand me the envelope. That just doesn't seem very clever.
There's a lot going on here that kind of just blows my mind. You can read a ton about this in CNN. If you want to go there, you can read, let's see, it's the January article I was reading, the title of which is Former High-Level FBI Official Pleads Not Guilty in Alleged Schemes to Help Sanctioned Russian Oligarch. They've got a bunch of other writing on it that's more recent. The other one you can find is titled, He Was One of These Rock Stars, Former FBI Agents Shocked at the Indictment of One of Their Own. It's also in the Times. It's also in Insider. I would just say if you're going to look into it right now, go to Insider, like businessinsider.com. They've got two huge articles. One's titled Exclusive, the FBI's McGonagall Labyrinth, and the other one is Inside the Extramarital Affair and Cash-Fueled Double Life of Charles McGonagall. Very fascinating stuff.
So question, or a couple questions. So we know he was not actively a member of the FBI, right? When he was doing this assistance?
Okay, so here's the revolving door kind of thing that we talk about a lot on this show. So McGonagall retires in 2018. Then he goes on to work for a law firm in New York. He's working there as a consultant. This guy knows a lot about this kind of stuff. And he's working on the sanctions of this guy, Deripaska. And the court filings state that he, at some point, traveled to London in 2019, also went to Vienna, and he met directly with this guy, with this oligarch. He met with others who were connected to the oligarch, and the discussions were around getting him delisted from the list of those sanctioned by the United States. So he was working directly for this guy to help him out, which is maybe fine. I don't know. Is that fine? Is that wrong?
He's not an
FBI agent anymore.
But he still has the FBI connections, you know, even after a retirement or a debrief or something. There are some gangs you don't ever get out of. You know what I mean?
Maybe,
so
yeah.
It'd be kind of naive to pretend that he couldn't call someone. I love the New York Times article that you hooked us up with here, Matt, because there's accounts of him, like, the FBI trying to make this guy a potential informant, feeling him out for that. And then later the oligarch comes back and says, hey, will you help get my daughter an internship? You know, these are things that people who aren't oligarchs and counter spies do on a daily basis, right? Help get my kid into college and so on. But so my other question is like,
but Ben, you hit on the right thing first before you get to that question, because while he was employed by the FBI in that position, he was in charge of investigating these oligarchs, keeping tabs on them, making sure they're not able to move their money and they're not making any weird moves, basically spying on these oligarchs. Then when he retires, he ends up going and working for a law firm that then helps out this oligarch. Then in 2021, according to the court documents, McGonagall and another person started working directly for the oligarch. So they cut the middleman that was the law firm out, and he was just working for this oligarch now.
Okay, so I guess the next question is, and I don't know if there's an answer. I think you're right. This has to be an episode. Is there, do we have any visibility or understanding on McGonagall's motivation? Like, you know, a lot of times people get turned because they have gambling debts or there's blackmail on them or something. I don't know.
Yeah. There's definitely something there. He liked money. No, I'm just joking.
I like money. Sorry, I just rewatched Idiocracy.
I like money.
Shout out Dax Shepard. That was so great. His podcast is good.
President
too.
Camacho? Is that the guy with the machine guns?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All that stuff. Man, what
some
a,
people hated
what a prescient bit of cinema that was.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it, you know?
Well, but to seriously answer that question, I do not know exactly. There's a ton of writing in Business Insider that I haven't even gotten to yet. So, cause I've just started digging into this, guys, but, he did have a girlfriend that lived with him, I think in Park Slope, or like they lived together in a one bedroom in Park Slope. He was married and they were ending, like he kept telling his girlfriend they're ending the marriage soon and all this stuff. He was using two phones. Because the FBI put out a memo that they had to stop using WhatsApp. And he was like, oh, crap. All my contacts are in my WhatsApp. So then he had two iPhones that he would carry around at all times. One was for, I guess, his Russian contacts and Albanian contacts. It's really fascinating. Again, that one is in Business Insider if you want to read all about that.
Mm-hmm. I'm seeing another tidbit here on one of the articles you linked. This one by... Matthias Schwartz, where it talks about the previous presidential administration using the McGonagall case as a way to discredit the FBI for the Mar-a-Lago stuff. I mean, like, the thing is, regardless of whether or not you live in the U.S., regardless of where you find yourself on the political spectrum, we have to realize that one of the reasons this is so important to the FBI, it's not always the clear reason you would think. It's not just a matter of national security. It's a matter of agency credibility as well, right? Like yep. if one person does something this bad and gets away for this long, then it makes everything else the organization does suspect. So this is a real kick in the pants for the FBI, even though they caught the guy, right? Am I right in that?
Oh, yeah, it's a pants kick. It's another reason that we should probably be paying, you know, government officials more money, at least the ones that are supposed to be spying or protecting or, you know, that kind of thing. You might reduce some corruption if you could pay them quite a bit more, but I don't know. Maybe not.
Also, I mean, seriously, like the level of scrutiny that someone at that position is in is pretty nuts. I mean, it's like other foreign agencies are looking at you the way Twitter looks at a celebrity, right? They want to know all about your stuff. And if you're in, if you are committing adultery, aren't you kind of in some ways signaling to foreign powers that you're down with deception?
It's some really good points. Yeah, man, that's a little bit of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of situation. At least at the very least, it shows that you are not averse to it, you know, for better or worse.
Yeah. Like if you're already cheating on your spouse, then what's to stop you from cheating on your country? Maybe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. This is Matt. This has to be an episode. This is nuts. How did this happen?
I think so. It's a deep rabbit hole. I'll leave you here with a quote from that same Business Insider article that you were talking about there, Ben. Quote, "The access you get in that job," speaking of the one McGonagall was in, "is extraordinary," one senior law enforcement insider said. Quote, "It's almost bottomless. If you're running FBI counterintelligence in New York, you can get your hands on almost anything you want. You don't always have to make excuses for why you're asking for it."
What? This is like the time years back when we were asking our bosses, like, hey, can we somehow maybe get an astronaut suit so this guy could just make these wild requests? You could just be like, dude, I need 400 left foot Air Jordans.
Bottomless access. Sounds pretty good to me. Wink. Sorry.
Sounds like another, sounds like a signature dish at Cracker Barrel, right? I'll have the bottomless access Salisbury.
Crazy for this one, Rick.
There we go. All right. So more to come from that, hopefully in the near future.
And speaking of the near future, tune in later this week when we do one of our favorite parts of the show, correspondence from you and your fellow listeners. We're going to have a wild ride ahead. I hope so, because we're about to record it, so I don't want to overpromise. But if you want to be part of this show, we'd love to have you on board. All you have to do is find us somehow on the internet or other ways. Or yeah,
you can find us all over the place, man. On Twitter and Facebook, we're Conspiracy Stuff. Also on YouTube, Conspiracy Stuff. On TikTok and Instagram, Conspiracy Stuff Show. Those are the places you can find us on social, but there's other stuff you can do.
Yeah, there's another thing. Well, there's two other things, but we'll get to the first one first, like you do. It's a telephone number. You can call 1-833-STDWITK. Leave us a message at the sound of Ben's dulcet tone, and you just let us know what to call you and use a clever nickname. You've heard this part before, unless you skip it. Don't skip it. We kind of change it up every time. There's always little Easter eggs peppered throughout these endings. So come on, stick around. And if you don't want to do that, why not get in touch with us the old-fashioned way with a good old email? We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.